Well, friends and countrymen, welcome back to another episode of Confederate Radio. This is your host, Lieutenant Colonel Bryce Provance, CSA 2, and Southern Independence Association. Today, the national meeting is taking place, so there should be some good news coming out of that we'll report on tomorrow or the next day. And there's other things going on around the world right now, like if you have not been reading the news or noticed or paid attention, you can't be blamed for that because there is so much going on all the time. It's hard to keep track, and especially with the news media, just like they did in the 1860s, they're only pumping out party propaganda. They are the propaganda arm of the government in Washington, D.C., the federal government, the one that we do not like because they keep effing us over and over and over and over again, and we keep just saying, tread harder, daddy. You know what I mean? Instead of don't tread on me, it's tread harder. But one of the things that's going on today is the Russian Wagner group mercenary leader has 25,000 men and he is marching on Moscow. There is a revolution. Putin has called for the destruction of the group, and these men who fought in Bakhmut for months against the Ukrainian forces, so they're hardened combat veterans who no longer feel like taking the mass casualties that Putin has ordered of them. They no longer feel that the war in Ukraine is something good for the motherland. They have turned on their superiors and are marching on Moscow. They've already seized the command center for the war in Ukraine. And now Moscow is readying for invasion. So the troops that were on the front will most likely, many of them will be pulled back to fight the Wagner group, to try and stop them. And I can't tell you if this is a good thing or a bad thing. Is this going to push Putin closer to nuclear war? What does that mean for us? What does that mean for us who want Southern independence? Nuclear war will destroy the nation. It won't destroy the world like many people think, but it will most definitely give us a nuclear winter of 15 years where crops won't grow, the sun will be blocked out, and millions will die. Now, will this push Putin, because he has said over and over that the West, the whole military might of the West, is arming Ukraine to fight against him. And who knows, maybe we paid the Wagner Group chief to turn on his masters in Moscow. Maybe it was us. Maybe he was just fed up. Maybe he wants to take power for himself and end this war. But what will Putin do at this point? Will he hit the button and push us towards nuclear annihilation? Or will there be a regime change? Will they put down the rebellion and then attack the U.S. economy with more vigor than they did previously? What happens next? We are at a point in history like was seen in the 1930s when Mussolini marched on Rome. This seems like a point in time when Caesar crossed the Rubicon to march on Rome. We're witnessing great and momentous events, but how will it affect us? What must we know? What must we do to get ready for an ever-changing world? What must we do to get ready for a world where the dollar is no longer supreme? I don't know about you, my friends and countrymen, comrades in arms, all, but I watch what goes on in countries with hyperinflation. I watch what goes on in Argentina. What do the people do? And they spend their checks on things that hold value. Because I think their inflation rate is something like 500% every couple months or every year. So the money that they make at their job is literally worthless in a couple months. So what they do is when they get a check, they buy things that are worth money. I've been sticking to silver and food and things like that to stay prepared. And I hope that everyone else is doing the same, buying radios, buying silver, buying bullets, buying food, books, Bibles, survival equipment, things that will keep you alive and will hold their intrinsic value. We are closer to nuclear war than even, I believe, during the Cuban Missile Crisis. At least that's what they say with the Doomsday Clock, the people who run that. And the Doomsday Clock, for those of you who don't know, is the clock that tells us how close to nuclear war we are. When it reaches midnight, then that's it. Boom, the bombs went off. And the closer it gets to midnight, the closer we are. I think last time I checked, we were 8 minutes to midnight. And I think during the Cuban Missile Crisis, we were about 30 minutes to midnight. So we must ask ourselves, with the Wagner chief marching on Moscow, we must ask ourselves now, as a nation, as a southern people, what are we going to do to prepare for if Putin launches the missiles? We ask ourselves too, is this a good thing? Is this a CIA-funded operation for a regime change in Russia? Why would they want that done? I see so many competing news stories every single day. Is Putin good? Is Putin bad? Is Putin against the New World Order? Is he for the New World Order? And it's hard with so much, I hate to say the term because of the guy who uses it all the time, but with the fake news, the propaganda that is put out by our state media every single day. The propaganda arm of the politicians in Washington is telling us Putin is an evil man. So do we trust our government in Washington, or do we distrust them? Do we wonder maybe he's fighting for something other than what they are telling us he is? Because if you look at any of his speeches, now these could be lies too to the people, but he tells them he's fighting against the New World Order. The laws that he made align more heavily with Southern values than anything else. He brought the Bible back. He brought all these laws to keep the family together. He's built himself a strong military, not one that's inundated with the victim stance that Washington, D.C. and the Democrats push down our throats. You know, if you're trans, you're a victim. If you're gay, you're a victim. If you are a person of color, you are a victim. But that's not what our civil rights leaders in the United States have pushed since Martin Luther King. They were not victims. They were standing up for their rights. It's like what I always say. Our ancestors did not die for our liberty. Our ancestors killed for it. And when you realize the difference between those two statements, you were closer to disconnecting from the matrix than you ever will be. Our ancestors were not victims. They did not lay down their lives. Yes, they did die. They were killed, but they weren't going out to get killed. That was not their plan. They were willing to kill. They were willing to shoot the enemy. They were willing to revolt against the powers that be because liberty was being taken from them. The inherent God-given rights of man. To survive, to defend yourself, to be secure in your possessions, to be secure in your home, to keep the government out of your church, to keep the government out of your school, and to keep the government out of your home. That's what these people went to war for. That is what they bequeathed us. That is what they gave us with a constitution, with a 10 Amendment Bill of Rights. They did not give us this Bill of Rights to restrain us, to restrain the people's power. They gave us the Bill of Rights to restrain our government from forming a tyranny over us. And we live in the tyranny that our forefathers were scared of, that they dreaded, that they fought against, and they fought for us to be free. They fought for us to be an independent nation that was ruled by common law, the law of the land, God's law, the law of nature. And we have flushed that down the toilet over and over again. We keep voting for the same horrible politicians who get into power to get rich. That's why we, as a Southern people, need to run our own candidates in local elections, in state elections, in every election we can. We need to get out there. We need to march. We need to picket Democratic National headquarters. We need to picket Democratic Party headquarters. We need to picket Republican Party headquarters. We need to picket and be out there with signs telling them that we will no longer stand for the bullshit. We will no longer stand for them taking enormous bribes, because that's what they are in their political action committees. Hundreds of thousands of dollars being dumped in by corporations that will then ask for favors. We can no longer have the pharmaceutical industry dumping money into politicians. We should no longer have politicians. It should not be legal for them while they are in office to buy and sell stocks. That needs to quit. There should be term limits on how long these people can be in office. Because as you see, these people, they go from high school to college. Then in college, they do some political science, you know, associate's degree or bachelor's degree. They get into politics immediately. They become a page. They become a secretary. They become a runner in some congressman's office. And then they run for office. Then they get elected because of their history of being in politics, this record that they can tout. You know, I worked for this congressman, I seen the inner workings of the halls of Congress. This is a ridiculous ideal. These men and women should have to have worked a job. Like, I don't care if you went to high school, went to college, and then you were a trainee in some congressman's office. I want to know what businesses you have built. I want to know what kind of practical experience you have out there in society. I want to know how many effing houses that you framed. I want to know how many roofs you put on. I want to know the real work that you did in society to survive, and you made it, and now you're going into politics. That's what I want to see. How many tours in combat did you do for our nation? Oh, you did nothing? You went to high school, then you went to college? No, that's not how this works. Because those are just micro societies that are completely controlled by the government, a public school and a university. We have teachers that led communist violent groups in the United States. We have professors that bombed and robbed banks at Yale. The leader of the Weathermen is still a professor in one of the most prestigious Ivy League schools in the nation. And these are the kind of people that they hire. I know for a fact at UNM in New Mexico, they have Antifa, avowed Antifa members as professors. Our tax money is going to pay in the salaries of people who are violently anti-democracy. It's just like George Orwell talks about in 1984, the double think, you know, the changing of words. You call yourself an anti-fascist, but then you use fascist attacks on freedom of speech. Everybody seems to forget the bomb threats that they called in when somebody was going to speak with an ideal different than theirs. People seem to forget that the peaceful protests in Portland turned into sieges of police departments. People seem to forget the individuals like Black Rebel, who was in Portland and got stabbed by a white Antifa member, a white BLM member. So a white man who says, I support Black Lives Matter, but then goes and stabs a black man for having a Confederate flag on his vest. What kind of nation do we live in? The continuous wars, the military-industrial complex. A lot of guys, when they're in the military and they realize that they're working for a corporation, they have two choices. Put their heads in the sand and don't think about it. Do something stupid. Or the third choice is try and deal with it. And there's thousands of men out here trying to deal with the work that they did for the corporation, because that's all our country is. If you look at any town's charter, right? The Articles of Incorporation, incorporating a town into a state. The Articles of Incorporation, incorporating the state into the Union. The country is a corporation. And what is a corporation's, what is the highest thing in a corporation? The bottom line. Are you making money for the corporation or are you not? Now, it doesn't matter if you conscientiously object to what the corporation is doing. It's still going to do it. It's still going to flood our streets with cocaine. It's going to flood our streets with heroin. It's going to flood our streets with fentanyl. If that's what protects the bottom line, the money that is brought in to those 500 to 1,000 men in Washington, D.C. who run this whole country, or the 1% of the population in this country that hold 90% of the wealth in this country. And that 1% is a club. They have interacted with each other for years. These people are friends, whether they're on the left or the right. The left wing and the right wing are two sides of the same bird. There's a group of people who control it all. Certain families who have for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. I don't like to get into conspiracy theories, but this is not a conspiracy theory. This is fact. Kissinger runs everything for the right. Soros ran everything for the left. Now I think he's given power to his son or something like that. But if you want to control a people, how do you do that? You control both sides of the aisle. So to win what we are entering into, we have to study the tactics of the enemy. We have to emulate the tactics of the enemy if they are winning. That seems to have always been the conservative problem. That we are too moral, we are too high-minded, we are too aristocratic, or whatever you want to call it, to engage in things that we believe are beneath us. Now, marching in the streets, oh my gosh, you know, that's beneath us. Getting out there with signs and picketing, oh, you know, they do that. We don't do that. Yeah, they do it, but they are winning because of what they are doing. So either we need to get out there and do what needs to be done and figure out what is going on, or we are going to continue down this path of giving our country away. Because that is everybody who does not act. Everybody who just sits there and hits a like button or a share button, that's not doing anything for our country or for our movement. Look at the mercenary chief of Wagner. Now, I'm not saying he's a good guy, but I'm saying that he's seen something wrong in his government, in his eyes, and he is marching. Or he might have been paid by the CIA. I don't know. But either way, it's an example that we can follow. I'm not calling for armed revolution, but I am saying a march on the Capitol. Well, not like January 6th either. Now, if you say a march on the Capitol, people immediately think you're an insurrectionist and you want to take over the government. I'm talking about on every state capitol. We need to have people down there every day. There is no gate holder at the state capitals. You can go there, park your car, get out with 10 of your friends and stand there with signs. You can go inside. And if there is people working there who work in Senate or in the Justice Department, you can talk to them. They are humans. They are not your gods. They are not your masters. They are not your commanders. They are servants of the people. So when you show up to talk to them, you go in there and talk to them. They are the servants of the republic, the representative republic, the people that we elected to work for us. They're not our overlords. They are not our masters. They are not our kings. They are none of the above. They are our servants. That's what surprised me so much about the January 6th thing. The people went into the people's house. The Senate building is called the House of the People, not the House of our Masters. They said it was a violent insurrection, but what happened in Milwaukee was not a violent insurrection. What happened in Louisville was not a violent insurrection. What happened in Atlanta, what happened in Washington, D.C., what happened in Portland were not violent insurrections where people died, buildings burned. But, you know, when conservatives march on the Capitol, stroll through the halls in large numbers, they don't hurt anybody. Oh my gosh, violent insurrection. That is the Orwellian doublespeak that I'm talking about. Now, I always encourage all of my listeners to read books. Go out there and read a book. Read George Orwell's 1984. Read George Orwell's Animal Farm. Read the Second Amendment Primer. Read the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers. Read the arguments that were being made by John Hancock, by James Madison, by Thomas Jefferson. Read the minutes of the Constitutional Convention. Read the speeches made by those men in those hallowed halls, those men who gave us a Second Amendment to be able to defend our freedoms. Read and understand, because I know it is a cliche saying, but knowledge is power. Knowledge is the only thing that they cannot take away from us, even though they try every single day. They try with the televisions. The televisions keep you docile. They try with the video games to where people believe that a video game is better than real life. They try with the media. They are constantly shoving ideals down your throat that are state-sponsored. Read books by men like Livy, Cicero, Caesar, Marcus Aurelius, Aristotle, Plato, Thoreau, Voltaire, Nietzsche. Read all these men. Find philosophies that are older than you, because everybody seems to think, at least the generations coming up, that there's only 50 years of history, that nothing really happened before their lives and their parents' lives. But that is wrong. There has been all of human knowledge is in books. Well, I shouldn't say all, but at least 95% of all human knowledge is in books. So if you can find a book, read a book. We have to be able to intelligently articulate Southern independence, the National Constitution, the Constitutional Convention. We must be able to articulate what we are fighting for, or we will be seen as ignorant, racist rednecks. That is what the media has promoted about the Southern people for years. They don't promote that it's the Bible Belt. They don't promote the high moral standards that everybody in the South holds. They don't promote any of that. No, you are an ignorant, racist, toothless redneck. Now, if you guys don't see that the television is the problem, the media is the problem, your telephone is the problem, then I don't know what else to tell you at this point. Because the government only gets scared when you disconnect. They get scared when you turn off the TV. They get scared when you turn off the telephone, because how are they going to control and manipulate you if you're disconnected? That's why they go after people who disconnect. So we as a people need to disconnect. We need to read books. We need to train. We need to get out there. We need to be out there with brochures. We need to be out there with signs. We need to be out there training. We need to be doing things like CSA2 and the Southern Independence Association is now. We need to be holding meetings. We need to be working at grassroots level to make a change. And we need to be preparing at the same time. Every political movement has had an armed wing. Now, I'm not saying form an armed wing, but I am saying form groups of your friends. Get together, train, learn a little bit about medical, like field medical. Learn a little bit about how to use a weapon, basic combat formations, movement to fire drills, simulating combat. Get out there with your friends and go paintballing once a week. But don't treat it as a game. Treat it as a real life thing. You get hit, you're dead. It's not a game. You don't revive. This ain't Call of Duty. This ain't Black Ops. This ain't none of that crap. And we must take pages from the enemy. Now, I do not admire all revolutionary movements, but I do look to them and see what worked and what didn't. And that's what we must do. I don't care if it's a communist revolutionary movement or a Republican revolutionary movement. We look at what they did, what didn't work, and what did work, and then we emulate what did work for our movement. We hold to our morals and values and ideals, but we look to everybody. Even if they don't hold the same ideals and moral values as we do. And then we say, hey, this worked. What the IRA did in Northern Ireland worked. You know, they had active combat units. When an active combat unit was taken off the streets, they still had, you know, the women's groups. They still had people publishing Republican literature in the neighborhood. They weren't an organization that relied completely on the active combat troops. They brought the civilians, they brought the whole populace of an area into the Republican network. Children's groups, women's groups, publishing. So that when the active combat unit was gone, they were still promoting a Republican lifestyle to the people. The message was still getting out there. And that's what we must do as well. They were running candidates for elections in Belfast and other areas. And that's what we must do. We must run candidates while being prepared. We must organize marches. Where are the great organizers of our movement? Why are there none? That's a good question. Why are there no great organizers? And why do the great organizers get thrown in prison if you're a conservative? Look at Enrique Tarrio. That man, leader of the Proud Boys, you know, all the news tried to say he was a racist, an evil racist Western chauvinist. The man was black and Cuban. Kind of hard to be racist when you're black and Cuban. Then they threw other slurs at him. He's an Uncle Tom. But he was a great organizer of marches. He was a great organizer of events. And he was a danger to the Republic, they say. But the only danger he was to was the communist occupiers in the federal government. the men and women who whore themselves out for a buck to the highest bidder. These people in Senate and Congress do not deserve our respect. They do not deserve our adulation because all they are is political prostitutes being pimped out by the certain families that are in power across the world. So go out there and protest. Go out there and do something. Give out brochures. Now, I don't talk and not do like I do these things. So don't think that I'm sitting here behind a microphone in somebody's basement doing my little podcast. No, I podcast when I can, but I get out there every week and do something. I hand out brochures. I get booths at gun shows. I get booths at any show I can. Knife shows, whatever. And I pass out literature. I talk to people. I engage. I get out there and stand on the road sometimes. And just like the people with the signs that say, God bless, anything helps. And I hand out brochures. The government is not your friend. Form a militia. Look into the Southern Independence Association. Look into CSA too. Oh, and by the way, I'm running for governor. I do all these things. And I encourage, no, I implore, I beg my listeners and members of the organizations that I'm a part of, and even people who aren't, get out there and do something. Because if we don't, then it is our generation that will lose this nation. They have robots. They have drones that can blow you up. All a guy has to do is hit a key on a computer 800 miles away, and you'll be dead in 5 minutes. It's hard to fight things like this, but it's not impossible. But soon it will be completely impossible to change what is going on. Our elections are rigged. If you're doing mail-in voting or electronic voting, they can manipulate that. And they will. Now, until something changes, let's say on each ballot, they have a number. And then you can check your number if the vote was casted correctly. That might fix the problem. But the elections are rigged at this point, and we need to figure out what to do. Brighter minds than mine have to figure out what to do, because I cannot tell you. I can only tell you what actions to take. I can't tell you the plan that must be put in place, what needs to be changed, or how it must be done. I can tell you to get out there and protest. I can tell you to podcast. I can tell you to print up flyers. I can tell you to do this, that, and the other. But these are all reactions to a problem. Brighter minds than me in conservative society need to come up with a plan, a national plan, at least throughout the South, and let us know how we can use these ideas that I've told you to go out and do to achieve our ends. There must be a strategy, a grand strategy. Now, believe me, I'm not saying what's going on in Russia is the answer, but I'm saying that's what's worked throughout history. Look at Caesar. He marched on Rome and took power. Look at Mussolini. Horrible, horrible man. Now, don't think I'm a fascist because I'm mentioning him. But like I said, look at things that worked in his march on Rome with 80,000 of his followers. That worked. Look at Che. Look at Castro. Look at George Washington. Look at Thomas Jefferson. They didn't die for our liberty, they killed for it. And our liberty is too precious for us to give up to a bunch of whores in Washington, D.C. Because that's all they are. They're political whores. Whores to the corporation that they formed and whores to the corporations that pay for them. That's what they should do. anybody in Washington, D.C., they should be like NASCAR drivers. On their jackets should have all the companies that sponsor them. So that we know, hey, this guy here, he's bought by Pfizer. You know, he's bought by the SPLC. You know, he's bought by BLM. He's bought by Antifa. He's bought by Lockheed Martin. He's bought by Raytheon. Like, who owns this man? That's what we need to know. We also need to know, and this needs to be beat into our heads, we are the last generation that can make a change before it's too late, before we have no chance. Why do you think they're taking our guns away? Why do you think they're attacking the Second Amendment? It's because if we can't defend ourselves, we become slaves to the corporation. They already tax us to a point where we are slaves to the corporation. Rockefeller himself, the Rockefeller family that funded the women's liberation movement, said, we're not funding it because we care about women. We're funding it because we can't tax women when they stay at home. We want them to get out and work, and then we can tax them as well. And if we split up the family unit, children have to go to public schools that we own, and they are indoctrinated to being good slaves to the corporation. If you teach your children at home, if one parent stays at home and one parent works, then you're able to form your child's mind. You are able to give them ideals that may be contrary to what the government wants. Now, the oligarchs can't have that. These prostitutes in Washington cannot have that. Because if you begin thinking for yourself and your child begins thinking for themselves, and then let's say more children do, oh gosh, they're going to have a problem. They're going to have a people disconnected from the system. Because all the system does, why don't they teach welding in schools? Why don't they teach how to start a business? Why don't they teach anything that can help you in life? Why do they teach you to obey, not to ask questions? You get in trouble if you ask too many questions. You get in trouble if you refuse to submit. Why is that? Because they are teaching a people to not respect authority, but to be subdued by authority. Now, if you don't ask questions of your government, you're perfect. You just go to work every day. You come home, spend a couple hours with your family, fall asleep. Believe me, I've done it. I've done it for years. I was out there working 8, 12, 14-hour shifts. Coming home, spending an hour, probably watching TV, then going to sleep. Now, let's say your wife does this too. How much time then do you get with your children in 18 years? So an hour a day, so that's 365 hours a year. Well, weekends. Okay, that's too much math for me, but you don't spend much with your children. And by the time you're helping them with their homework, you're too tired to be like, hey, WTF is this, mate? You know? It doesn't process because you're beat, and that's what they want. They want somebody who's beat, who works, who pays his taxes, who contributes to the machine. We need to wake up. The Southern people again need to lead not a violent revolution, but we need to lead the peaceful revolution. We need to lead it because nobody else will. And our time is now. I am praying that a lot of good comes out of this national meeting. I'm praying that our delegates to the meeting are able to come together with a grand strategy for us to win. And I have faith that they will, because this has been talked about. This has been on the table. How are we going to organize and how are we going to move to save the country? And if we can't save the country, then just like our forefathers in 1860, we must leave the country with the Constitution, then stay in a country that is willing to shred the Constitution, is willing to piss all over the graves of our founding fathers, a people who are willing to destroy this nation to retain their power. This is Lieutenant Colonel Bryce Provance with Confederate Radio, CSA 2, and Southern Independence Association signing off with God bless you and God bless this country.
Just what I am, and for this Yankee nation I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I hate the Yankee nation and everything they do. I hate the Declaration of Independence too. I hate the glorious Union 'tis dripping with our blood. I hate the striped banner, I fit it all I could. I rode with Robert E. Lee for 3 years thereabout. Got wounded in four places and I starved at Point Lookout. I caught the rheumatism, a camping in the snow. But I killed a chance of Yankees and I'd like to kill some more. 300,000 Yankees is stiff in southern dust. We got 300,000 before they conquered us. They died of southern fever and southern steel and shot. I wish they were 3 million instead of what we got. I can't take up my musket and fight 'em now no more. But I ain't gonna love 'em now that is certain sure. And I don't want no pardon for what I was and am. I won't be reconstructed and I do not give a damn. Oh, I am a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. For this Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done.